Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in 1920s Baseball. This is your podsman, Josh. I got my fellow podsman, Matthew, on the line. How you doing, Sweet Bread?
Hey, Bucketfoot. How are we doing today?
Doing good. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's not raining, which is shocking. But, you know, it's been a little while. We've been really busy.
Yeah.
And we're back in the library, of course.
Back to work. Things are busy. We hit the midway point of the season already, 1920s midway season already. We hit double digits in podcast episodes, and we hit the midway point of the 1920 season, so milestones are falling.
Milestones everywhere, yeah.
And we wanted to talk about our All-Star selections for the 1920 team. Of course, there was no All-Star game until what year? About 10 years later?
1933, remember? I think, was the first one, Josh.
Sounds right. Yeah. So 1920, I believe that the All-Star tradition started in the Negro Leagues, if I'm not mistaken. And it was a little while till the MLB adopted it, but we thought, well, let's pretend we are choosing the MLB All-Star game here at midseason. And we thought I'd take the National League. Sweet Bread would take the American League, and we would follow the traditional All-Star rules where you have to have at least one player from each team. And I picked a couple backups just because, and I picked five pitchers. I don't know how many pitchers you got. I decided to pick five.
Yeah. I went a little 1920 lean. And we hadn't really discussed this. So I did like 11 total. So it was like eight position players, a pitcher, and three pitchers.
Oh, okay.
Three nice. Pitchers, and then yeah, like no backups for the position players. There's definitely ones I could name, but you know, it was tough because the modern rules where you have to have a player from every team in Major League Baseball. Of course, there's only eight teams in each league versus today, where there's what, like 15 or 16 in each league now. And you know, of course, all the backups. You know, I just remember like as a kid, like watching. You watch like the starting lineups, and then you watch they introduce everybody on each team, and then you have like the token player from from like the Tigers or something,
or the Phillies.
Yeah,
we always called them the default stars. That was the name nice. That my friend used to call them, the default stars. And yes, it was always kind of amusing to see someone who really, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the reason they did this was to try to just draw up attention in each media market. The idea was that the All-Star game wouldn't be of interest to, say, a Tigers fan if there were no Tigers on it.
So yeah.
It was in order to make it a national media event that MLB picked that role. That's what I heard anyway.
So. It makes a lot of sense.
And now it's probably different. I mean, fan bases are more nationally diverse, but it's still kind of a fun tradition. You got to
and they keep expanding it too. I could have sworn they expanded it like 5 years ago or something, maybe a little bit longer.
Remember that year that they ran out of pitchers that 1 year? It was weird. Brad Lidge.
That's right. Yeah. That was the 1 year where they went into extra innings or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, right. Some pitchers in particular just will sit it out now because it's not worth the injury risk for the prestige. But in the old days, it definitely was a huge deal. And I had fun picking my team. Want me to jump right into it?
Sure. Yeah. I was just going to say, we kind of, we had the luxury of being able to look at it in the entire season, I think, you know, it's probably easier than the midseason voters. But yeah, we also talked about how difficult it was to always find out, you know, there's no like what page you can go to have like the league leaders in the first half of the 1920. I don't know. Maybe there is.
I think you have to have one of those paid accounts. I just use baseball reference. So what I did was I looked at, and it was hard a little bit to find league leading statistics for midway point. So what I did is I would look at who ended up leading the league by position in different categories. And then I would go to that player's game log and see where their numbers were around the middle of July. So it's not exactly precise, but I got some numbers and I got some picks. And my first pick, catcher in the National League, was not the easiest position. I mean, all the catchers were essentially equally mediocre. I was tempted to choose Pickles Dilhoffer because he's the greatest name, of course. We'll get into nicknames later. He did finish the year hitting .263, which was high for the catchers. At the midway point, he was only hitting .240. His on base was only .280. So I thought Pickles really could not be my all-star.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't pick him.
I didn't pickles him. I Dill Hoffed him off the team. that almost was a pun. I don't know. But I did look up his Wikipedia page just out of curiosity, and I did not know this. It said Dillhofer was famously 1/4 of what is generally considered one of the worst trades in Philly's history. He was sent with Mike Prendergast from the Cubs to the Phillies in exchange for Bill Kilever and Grover Cleveland-Alexander. So how about that? The Phillies gave up Grover Cleveland-Alexander for a mediocre catcher with the great name of Pickles Dillhofer.
But they, you know, they did get Pickles Dillhofer.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, who needs the greatest starting pitcher of all times? So my catcher I ended up choosing was the Boston Braves catcher, a 22-year-old named Mickey O'Neill. He was hitting 259 at the break. He ended up in the year 283. He didn't have, you know, huge numbers. Didn't have a huge career. But also the Braves were really bad. I needed to pick someone from the Braves, and I needed to pick a catcher. So Mickey O'Neill gets the start behind the dish with his 259. I did the triple slash line, you know, the average on base slugging. So he's 259, 314, 304. You see some really low slugging percentages. You know, he was really just slightly above average, honestly, but I needed a catcher. I needed a Brave. I went with my man, Mickey O'Neill.
Nice. Do you want to go position by position back and forth, or you want to just do your team? And I'll do.
Go ahead. Just go back and forth. Tell me your catcher.
All right. So, okay. So, yeah, that might work well. I don't remember if we just mentioned this, but we were thinking about a little competition between our teams. And I think Josh and I agreed that maybe I had a little bit of an advantage when we kind of first looked at it, that the American League might, you know, especially when it comes to the hitting.
Your outfield is nuts.
Jacked. Yeah. Like, I ended up leaving Ty Cobb off my team. I mean,
Cobb didn't make it.
And also our boy, Happy Felsch as well. I mean, there's so many great outfielders.
Ty Cobb's going to be really mad at you. I'd be afraid if I were you.
He's going to come back from his grave.
He's going to haunt you.
Lot me. So we were thinking about maybe if we could find like a computer program and we could put like, you know, our team in and have it simulate a game or even a series and see what happens. It'd be kind of fun. Cause I think we'll see, but you know, I think you might have a little bit better pitching than me, so maybe it'll balance it out. So anyway, I don't mean to be too long-winded before my catcher.
I'm excited to hear it.
Talked about this. So a lot of these picks, well, some of these picks are determined really by needing a player from each team. You know, I was between like just punting catcher and just putting like whoever from like Washington or Detroit and or Boston and just throwing somebody in there and not really caring and using that slot up for a team, or putting like a pretty good hitter in there. And again, I didn't do enough research probably whether or not he was a good defensive catcher, but I picked Steve O'Neill with the Indians, who is from Manuka, Pennsylvania, which is a neighborhood in Scranton. A lot of Pennsylvania folk here. I think just in general, like,
yes.
What would you say, Josh? Like, just a ton of Pennsylvania born players in general in the majors at the time.
Yeah, the coal mines produced a lot of players.
Seriously.
Produced strong, angry young men with a desire to escape a life of drudgery. That's a good way to create a baseball player.
So, okay, so I picked Steve O'Neill, who's having a career year for the Cleveland Indians. You know, I don't have his first half stats, but he actually ends up hits 321 for the year.
Wow.
With a 408 on base percentage. So some really good catcher numbers, especially for the time. The time I think catchers were predominantly just defense. So yeah, he's in the middle of having a pretty good year here.
And we have an all O'Neill. We have an all O'Neill backstop situation then.
Yeah. So the O'Neills can duke it out, you know.
All right.
On mono.
So I'm going around the diamond then to first base. I had a tough call because really two this week in 1920s baseball favorites in the NL at first. Jake Daubert and High Pockets Kelly. So Jake Daubert, just from being from Sheboygan, Pennsylvania, and just from catching our eye really early on, and from being an early winner of the Chalmers Award. And High Pockets Kelly, just for like one of the greatest names. But High Pockets Kelly did not get the call. I went with Jake Daubert. Jake Daubert here at midpoint, hitting over 300, on base 376, slugging 389. High Pockets Kelly had a little bit more, he had a better slugging percentage. He hit more extra base hits, but he had a lower on base. So I feel like with the OBP of 376 and just, you know, honoring really a lifetime of great work, going with Sheboygan, PA's Jake Daubert from the Reds at first base.
Boykin. Oh, man, what a name.
That's the man.
So, yeah, I think my pick is going to be probably pretty obvious to everybody listening to the podcast. Our favorite George Sisler, Sisler Watch. I think, you know, if there was all-star balloting in 1920, probably Babe Ruth might be number one, right? Just in terms of his popularity.
Yes.
You might have to give it to George Sisler in terms of maybe second overall in terms of the balloting, because he's just coming off that insane June, right, that we talked about where he hit like 550 or something.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, he's in the middle of one of the greatest hitting seasons of all time in terms of just total number of hits. He's playing in that little ballpark that maybe we'll do, you know, do an episode on some ballparks later in the year. Mm-hmm. But that little ballpark in St. Louis, and he's having these unbelievable home statistics. So I'm obviously going to go with Sisler. We've gotten into him pretty much already, so I don't think we need to go too much into his stats. But, yeah, that's my first baseman.
You got the man at first, and you got the outfield. But I got the best second baseman in the game, Rogers Hornsby. We checked in on him a couple weeks ago, and his stats weren't all that impressive. But when I looked at it again, he is having a good first half. He actually had a 14-game hitting streak to start the year. Here at the midpoint, he's leading the National League in slugging by quite a bit. He is hitting .374 halfway through the year. OBP of .432, slugging of .590. He ends up leading the league in total bases and RBIs. This is his first year at second. He had been a third baseman and played a little bit of short until Branch Rickey moved him over to second, and then he went on to be one of the greatest second basemen of all time. So he's the number one vote-getter from the NL, the Rajah, Rogers Hornsby, out of St. Louis. Beat that.
All right. Well, I actually have a pretty good player. And, you know, he's going to come up again, I think, later when we talk about the Black Sox as one of the players that is not going to be implicated is Eddie Collins.
The college
son. I forget where he went to college. You know, he's a Hall of Famer, very consistent career. He's one that, you know, you don't hear as much about anymore, but I think he, you know, still regarded as one of the greatest second basemen of all time. Obviously, you know, Hornsby completely overshadows him, but he's in the middle of a quite an impressive year. He ends up hitting .372. I'm having problems finding his splits. I'm going to try to keep up with that for some of my future players, but he hit .372 for the year with .438 on base percentage and 117 runs scored. So
that's a good offensive team, and he was a key piece of it for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, just a great team. They should have been a dynasty. So it's unfortunate.
My shortstop started the year in the Phils, got traded to the Giants. I'm not sure why, because the Phillies did not have a good shortstop. But it's this guy named Dave Bancroft who put a good year together. Not phenomenal, but he was known as a really good defender. He hit .284, .330, OBP, .350 slugging, so not a big slugger. But he's representing the Giants, who are not very good. But he is he's repping the Giants in the starting lineup. Shortstop Dave Bancroft, not an all-time great. I don't think I've ever heard his name before, but he's jumped out at me, and I did a little bit of searching, and a couple of things mentioned his gloves, so I'm going with glove work up the middle, Dave Bancroft.
All right, well, my shortstop's also the kind of it's a pick that I kind of felt like I was forced to take because I needed to have a player, and I guess I could have put Cobb in the outfield with him for my Tiger, but I don't know. I gave it to Speaker and this other player, just out of nostalgia for some of the stuff we're going to talk about later. But the player I picked was Donnie or Donnie Bush, D-O-N-I-E. I guess Don, probably Donnie Bush from the Tigers. And, you know, I didn't peek at his splits because I probably should have, because he didn't end up with a terrible year overall. He ends up hitting .263. He's got 85 runs scored and 15 stolen bases. You know, pretty decent little year for a shortstop at the time, but his splits, he hit .197 in the first half.
Oh man. Now Cobb is so
probably not the smartest pick. So yeah, I don't know if we can even extrapolate our projection in terms of head to head, you know? So yeah. So he hits .329 in the second half, but he's having a pretty bad first half.
Ty Cobb is so mad now that's who he got left off for. Yeah. He's gonna murder Donnie in the clubhouse.
For doo-doo Donnie Bush, right?
Yeah. He's getting murdered by Ty Cobb. I just realized even though I keep saying how bad the Giants are, my entire left side of my infield is Giants because the third baseman is Frankie Frisch, Frankie Frisch was a really good little player for the Giants. 313, 347, 452 with a pretty good number of stolen bases. He's only 22 years old here in 1920. He would have a long career, go on to have a nice, really good long career. Frankie Frisch. Pie Trainer of the Pirates didn't come up until the end of the year. He's one of the all-time guys who showed up in this 1920 season, but really not until the very end of the year. My second choice, I did want to give a shout-out to Heine Groh. That's a good name. Heine.
Excellent name.
And he is having a good year for the Reds. But for my starting third baseman, I went with the man Frankie Frisch.
Okay. I went with another Pennsylvania boy, and he's playing in Pennsylvania as well. So I went with Joe Dugan, great third baseman, shortstop, and second baseman over his career, but he's in third base this year. He is from Mahanoy City, Pennsylvania, which is up in coal country that is kind of in between Wilkes-Barre and Hazleton. And again, I might be mispronouncing that. I apologize. Mahanoy City. So yeah, he had a great career with the Yankees and the Athletics. And he's having quite a nice little season as a third baseman. He ends up hitting a 322. His first half, he hits 301. So he's filling my, you know, he's filling my Athletics slot for the team. But, you know, pretty good third baseman. Pretty nice overall career. His WAR, I think, was a 9.4. Hit 280. So not bad for a third base at shortstop.
Nice. That is good. The outfield for the National League obviously is nothing like the AL National League, but I did find some, you know, tough choices had to be made here. There was a number of really good outfielders. I didn't choose Cy Williams from the Phillies. The Phillies were a little tough to pick. They're not very good either. Cy Williams was their best hitter, and he actually ended up leading the National League in home runs, nowhere near Ruth's total, but he was a decent little power hitter for the Phils. And I also like Max Carey from the Pirates. He led the league in steals, but shout out to Zach Wheat, who I left off from Brooklyn.
Oh, man, those Wheat, they make their way in. They sneak into every episode.
Had to get him in there. But I did choose another guy with a good name, Hi Myers, who's the center fielder from Brooklyn. He had a slugging percentage here midway at 450, mainly because he hit a lot of triples. He was a fast runner. Triples were a big part of the game. And Hi Myers was my starting center fielder from the Brooklyn Robins.
So we're on outfield. Did you start with like a left field? Did you left, center, right, or did you just do three outfielders? I'm trying to remember.
I did pick a center, left, and right.
Okay.
Even though all the good outfielders in the NL are center fielders. So yeah. My left and right are not as good, but I did – that is how I started.
And that makes sense, too, when you think about, I guess, well, back in the day, you know, the monstrous cavernous seven center fields, the way that the parks were shaped, they were diamonds as opposed to that arc you see now with the kind of – the 375, right, kind of standard left center, right center, 385. Now, you know, back in the day, you could have a 480-foot center field fence, so you had a lot more ground to cover, potentially. All right, well, yeah, so I ended up with left center and right, so I'll start with my left fielder, and I'll start, and again, this is it was tough picking. There's a lot of really good outfielders, so I'm going with Shoeless Joe Jackson. Tragically is in – you know, the middle of one of his best overall seasons. He's just having an unbelievable season. He's going to hit 382.
Wow.
With 20 steals. I mean, 20 triples, 12 homers, and 121 RBIs with 105 runs scored with a 444 on base percentage and almost a 600 slugging. I mean, that's for 1920.
Yeah, no one has that.
He kept being able to play and, you know, started to hit home runs too. What some of his stats would have been. So for the first half, he's also been incredible. He's hitting 398 with 10 triples, 24 doubles, 62 RBIs in the first half. So that's my left fielder, Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Well, that makes my left fielder feel kind of bad. He's only hitting 308. He's hitting like almost 100 points lower. But this is a guy named Pat Duncan from the Reds. The Reds have a really good team.
Yeah.
And I wanted to find someone who played left and put up good numbers. Like I said, a lot of my other good outfielders, the Reds center fielder, Ed Rausch, is hitting 327 at this point, 400 on base percentage. He ends the year with 36 steals, 90 RBIs, a good average. So, but the this left fielder, Pat Duncan, you know, OBP of 373 every day, left fielder for the Reds. So not a Shoeless Joe season, but a solid left field for the National League All-Stars. by the name of Pat Duncan.
All right. Well, center field was a big controversy, obviously. We've
two of the best of all time.
Yeah. We've left Cobb out in place of Speaker. And, you know, I think the reason I did this is because Cleveland is having this unbelievable year. And Speaker is both the manager and their star player and center fielder.
He does it all.
Incredible to think about today. So, yes, the Speaker is having quite a year. He is, you know, at this point, 379 with a 54 walks to 9 strikeouts, which is unbelievable. And he already is at 68 runs in the first half with a 483 on-base percentage. He's going to finish the season with a 388 batting average and a 483 on-base percentage with 111 RBIs and 137 runs and 50 doubles. So, I mean, and obviously the Gray Eagle, as he was known, one of the greatest defensive center fielders of all time, Chris Speaker.
He used to play sometimes so shallow that he was almost like an extra infielder, and then he could still range all the way back to track down long flies. I mean, that's an amazing.
Yeah. Who was the guy recently? Was it Andrew Jones that used to do that? There was a couple of guys recently, I remember.
Depending on who's at bat, I could see it, yeah. But Speaker was unbelievable. Yeah, manager, offense, defense, everything. I just realized, so the Giants, we'll have to go over the standings again, but the Giants are bad. But I have 3 starters on my all-star team and 1 backup because High Pockets Kelly was my second choice at first. But my starting right fielder is a guy named Ross Youngs, and his nickname is Pip Youngs. He finished the year hitting 351, which I think is why he caught my eye. That's quite a good year. His first half average was just 301, but a 388 on-base percentage, 416 slugging, and he was known as a very good outfielder. There was another outfielder I was thinking about. It was by the name of George Burns, who was a good outfielder defensively as well. But I went with Ross Youngs in right to round out my starting team. So Youngs, Duncan, and Myers in the outfield. Frankie Frisch, Dave Bancroft, Rogers Hornsby, and Jake Daubert, and then Mickey O'Neill behind the plate. And then, so I'll let you share your shocking pick for right field, and then we'll get into the pitchers.
My shocking pick, the newly acquired New York Yankee, George Herman Ruth.
That's the man.
Is in the middle of having not just a breakout season, but possibly the breakout season in Major League history.
Yes.
Now, and one of the impetus is obviously 100 years ago, but I think one of the impetuses that you had originally when you thought about putting together this podcast, right?
Yeah.
The sale of Ruth. So as we previously have talked about, he started off just a little bit slow, but then really kicked it into gear. And these, I'm going to give you his first half numbers, which are respectable full season numbers. And this is 76 games. He has 82 runs scored, 16 doubles, 7 triples, 28 home runs, 77 RBIs, 10 stolen bases, wow. A 383 batting average, a 516 on base, and an 834 slugging. And that's the first half of the year. Of course, he's going to go on to hit 54 home runs, completely shattering his own record. Hitting 376 with an OPS of 1.38.
And he did get a win, right, as a starting pitcher, his one pitching appearance.
So he could also be a long-term backup. Him and Sisler. I have the two-way players.
Apparently. You got some arms and some sticks, and no one else in the majors came close to 28 home runs for their season. And that was his first half number.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we talked about right in the beginning that there was a couple of players that were chasing him, but they quickly were left by the wayside.
I don't think anyone even reached 20. I think maybe the second highest was in the teens. So his first half was beyond what most guys did in the full year. When we were talking about the ballparks, and we're doing some research on the ballparks, and we're going to talk. There's some interesting nooks and crannies and histories to each of the stadiums, but some of the owners and they really, in reading about like the difference between dead ball and, you know, the next era of baseball, which we're really on the cusp of here. And obviously when you're talking about 500 foot center field fences, like just, it's not fair to compare the old guys to the next generation when it comes to home runs. But part of that definitely was by design. Like, some of the owners and just fans of the game pre-Ruth or just old school guys, I guess, they thought home runs were just boring. Like they almost describe them like it was like a foul ball. Like it's just the ball leaves the field and that's boring. So they designed some of these stadiums for triples and for inside the park home runs. They thought that was way more exciting watching someone race around the base paths than watching them just sock it out and loop the bases. So of course Ruth changed all that, but that was definitely the thinking in the previous years. So
that's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's interesting to think about how that mentality changed so quickly and so fully, but yeah.
Well, I'll have you guess. You were right. It was 19 home runs was the second most in the majors. And I'll try to have you guess who it was.
I think it was that dude on the Phillies, Cy Williams.
Yeah, he was fourth with 15. This player is having, again, a monster year.
Hmm.
A monster year.
Is that a hint?
I don't think I said that correctly. We have a sound blurb for him.
Oh, is it Sisler?
It is.
When you said monster, I thought it was – I was thinking Red Sox. I was thinking it was a green monster. I thought it was someone in Fenway. So George was second in the
league. Yeah, he had 42 steals. I didn't even realize that. So anyway.
He could do it all.
I apologize.
What was his homer total?
19.
Oh, so he almost hit 20. So Ruth's first half was better than anyone's full season.
Yeah.
In terms of dingers.
Well better. Yeah.
Much better. Yeah. 50% better. Well, that's awesome. So now that we've talked a lot about how great your offense is, let's get to how great my pitching staff is. Starting pitcher, I'm giving the nod to the great Grover Cleveland Alexander. His ERA at this point is 1.91. He has 16 wins already in the first half for a not great Cubs team. That's my starting pitcher, one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, and you know, I think I noticed, I don't know if you noticed this too, like this is a year where pitching is down. Like, I mean, this is the year where the ball's
right
different. There's no more spitballing, right, for the most part.
Right.
I forget that we had mentioned a few other things, like they were using more balls now or something.
Yeah, offense is up, right?
So offense is up. It's like one of those spike years, you know, in baseball history. So that ERA is impressive.
Yes. I have two guys with the ERA under two on my pitching staff here. But one of them, the great Grover Cleveland Alexander.
So as you'll see, I think some of my pitching selections are really based on having to have players from these teams. But the first one was between Bigby and this gentleman from Schmoiken.
Yeah, Kovaleski.
Stan Kovaleski. He had a better first half. I think.
Yes, he had a phenomenal first half.
Bigby had a better overall season, but Kovaleski has quite an impressive first half. He is, let me just see here. He had a 2.13 ERA, and he was 15-6, two shutouts in the first half. So,
yeah, he won a bunch of games in a row. Yeah. I mean, obviously.
The top Cleveland pitcher, who, and again, they're the top of the American League. So everybody's having career years for Cleveland this year.
You got that right. So my Philly choice, since we did have to pick one, and he is having a great year, our man Specs Meadows, Philly's starting pitcher. Yeah, so he's 9-4 at the midway point. He started the year 8-1, as we mentioned. He had a really great start to the year. Here at the point where I looked at his first half stats, he had an ERA of 2.87. He gets hit pretty hard in the second half of the year. There's a couple games where he blows up and gives up a lot of runs, and then just overall decline. So he ended up with more of a 500 year, but the Phils are pretty bad, so he was the easy choice for the Phillies, Specs Meadows.
Oh, excellent. All right. My next one was kind of it'll be a controversial pick, I think. And, you know, he's having like an okay season so far, but we do know that he's going to get injured and his season's going to get shut down. But, of course, one of the all-time greats, the big train, Hunter Johnson. Not having a great year, but I needed a Washington pitcher. I figured he'd get a lot of votes, you know, just imagining if it was not a coaching vote, but a fan vote.
Either way, they'd honor him for his greatness.
They might honor him and put him on the All-Star team. He's not having a very good first half. I don't have the standings in front of me, but I think it's about 500 with about a 3 ERA. Terrible numbers, but not Walter Johnson type numbers. Probably not getting a lot of run support. I think
I think in my memory, Walter Johnson is like, you know, he's lost more 1-0 games than any pitcher in history, or, you know, more two games than anything in history.
That sounds right.
Yeah, he's only going to end the season with an 8-10 record with a 313 ERA, so getting shut down early.
Well, the next surprising really good name for my start pitching staff is Dutch Ruther, who is a starting pitcher for the Reds. His first half number is 13-6 with an ERA of 1.91. So the Reds were obviously really good, and Dutch Ruther was the ace of their staff. So he would probably be actually my number two pick. I sort of went out of order there to give Specs a shout out. But Specs. Dutch Ruther from the Reds. Yeah, same ERA as Grover Cleveland Alexander of a 1.91. So
all right, my last one again, it was kind of a pick that I kind of had to make from strategy perspective. So again, I think your pitching is going to maybe dominate my hitting and vice versa. I don't know. And that is the great Herb Pennock. From Pennsylvania, from Kenton Square, from the Mushroom Capital. And, you know, he's a lefty. He's playing with the Red Sox this year. He's not having an amazing year, but, you know, pretty good. He ends the year at 16-13, a 3.68 ERA. Right? Not an amazing year, but, you know, pretty good. His first half is a little bit better than his second half. He's at 10-8 with a 3.34 ERA. You know, kind of a value pick there to get a Red Sox in there. Most of their good players at this point are outfielders. They were not going to be fitting
right
onto my all-star roster. So there you have it. There's mine. I know you might have had a few more to mention.
Well, I picked a slightly bigger pitching staff, but if I'm going to match you here, I have to pick one of my Pirates because I didn't mention anybody on the Pirates yet. So my other pitchers I was interested in going with were Burley Grimes, who has from Brooklyn with a 12-5 record of 2.11 ERA.
With an amazing car. Yeah, we love Burley Grimes.
Old stubble beard. And also Hippo Vaughn from the Cubs, the second best pitcher on that Cubs team behind Alexander, but still really good. 11 wins, 2.43 ERA. But I gotta go with a Pirate. You know, this is a tough call here because you either go with Wilbur Cooper, who had more wins. He had 14 wins already, or you go with Babe Adams, who had the slightly lower ERA. I'm gonna go with Babe Adams just because I think he's really interesting. He had 8 wins, but he had an ERA of 2.3 and 8 losses also. So his win-loss record doesn't look that impressive. But we know that's not everything. And we know the ERA is impressive. And also, so this is his end-of-year number, but he set the record that stood until 2005 for the fewest so it's basically walks per – it's not walks per 9, but basically they factor how many innings it takes you to equal one walk. So anyway, he averaged one walk per 14.6 innings. So I'm not sure exactly how that stat is worded, but yeah, he averaged way less than one walk per 9. It took him and that record stood until 2005. So Babe Adams of the Pirates, good ERA and an amazing control pitcher, and my only rep from the Pirates. So I'm going with my own Babe. Take that with your Babe Ruth. I got Babe Adams.
All right. Well, we'll have to figure out, you know, how to. See if we can get them going head to head. That should be fun.
We'll plug it into out of the park baseball.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. Let's set the standings. Do you have that in front of us? We can tell everyone where the midseason standings are.
Sure. I think I have that here somewhere. Let me pull that up. All right. So today is Wednesday. Well, today is Tuesday, but 19/20. It is Wednesday, July 14th. So the Indians are still leading the pack. They're having an unbelievable year. 671 win-loss percentage. They're 53-26. A game and a half up, though. The Yankees are also just barnstorming at 53-29. And then the White Sox, you know, that really talented White Sox defending American League champions, they're 4.5 out at 48-30. And then you have a big drop off. The Senators are middling at 38-36, 12.5. The Browns are kind of keeping pace, 39-40 at 14 out. Boston, 37-39, 14.5. And then the big drop off again, we keep mentioning. Our Tigers, who started off so poorly, are still doing pretty bad, a 3.16 win-loss percentage, 24-52. 27.5 out. And then the Athletics. The Philadelphia Athletics are having, and I don't know, we should probably look this up. This is one of the worst win-loss percentages I've ever seen in my life. 256, 21-61, 33.5 out, which is, you know, just absurd. So they're really not having a good year. Poor Joe Dugan down there.
Yeah, you're 33.5 out at the break.
Yeah, you're projected to just about, we're a little bit further on, but maybe, you know, they're probably projected to be 60, 60 games out for a 154 game season, something like that. So maybe even a little bit more. All right. So the NL are Robins, the Super Bas. They're hanging tough at 48-33. You know, they've played considerably more games than the next team, Cincinnati Reds, who have all that talent, as you mentioned. They're just a game out. And then the Pirates, they're hanging tough with their anemic offense, but, you know, Babe Adams and the like. They're 6.5 out at 38-36. So, you know, they're still in it. Cardinals 40-41 with the Raj. 8 out. The Cubs 40-42 with our boy Grover Cleveland, 8.5. The Giants have fallen back, I think, after having kind of a hot June or hot early June. I think we talked about last time they had kind of come up in the standings. They're at 37-41, 9.5 out. You know, the NL is a lot more even. And then the Braves, 31-38. Of course, they're in Boston, 11 out. And then the Phillies. These Phillies teams are not having a good year here.
They're not good.
I hope it's not a harbinger of this. 30-46, 395 winning percentage. But again, you know, they're much better than Detroit or the Athletics. They're 15.5 out. So there are your standings for July 14th.
Yeah, it is interesting. The AL has three teams with a winning percentage over 600, and the NL has zero.
Yeah, so the White Sox would be in first place right now.
Yep.
Third. Yeah.
Yeah. The actual worst. So the A's of 1916 and 1919 are among the very worst teams of all time. This 1920 season doesn't rank in the top 10 of worst teams of all time. But they're still bad, obviously. But think about this. In 1916, they were 36-117. Their winning percentage was .235. And then last year, 1919, they were 36-104, .257. They ended the year 52 games back. So this year, like, you know, having 21 wins at the break is better than they were the previous year.
Where so they highs and lows for that Connie Mack team, because, you know, they won a bunch of championships, yeah. I think, earlier, like, you know, 10 years earlier, right? 1912 or something, I think. 19, maybe even 1915, I forget. But, you know, they had the great, great, great teams in the 19-aughts, and then they had great teams in the late 20s and early 30s. So
they have a number of teams on this list of worst records of all time. 1916, like I said, they were .235. 1919, their winning percentage was .257. 1915, their record was 43-109. They finished 58.5 out, and a record of .283. So they are definitely on the list here. The Phillies were on it a bunch of times too. So our Philly teams are not great. The only modern team on here is the 2003 Tigers. I don't know if you remember how bad they were. They were 43-119.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't really remember that. That's wild. Yeah, it's an interesting pennant race shaping up here. We got a couple teams, you know, one separated by one in each division, so or in each league, and then a couple guys within shouting distance. So that's your standings.
Hey, Potsman Josh here. I decided to split the podcast right there and end it before we go into our next big topic of conversation, which is our all nickname team. So as you can imagine, that one goes on for quite a bit because we sure do love our old timey nicknames. So we decided to make that a separate episode. So sorry for ending this one kind of abruptly, but tune in next time for the all nickname choices in This Week in 1920s Baseball.